are live, I believe. Welcome, Highfalutin Schema Podcast number 51. It is your friends and host, Mario and Brian. Mario, what's going on, man?
What's up, everybody? Having a good time this week?
Yeah, we are doing this on Google Hangouts again. You know, last week we were live in the studio for number 50. And now we're back doing things the new fashion way, doing it online, doing it Google Hangout style, which has been an adventure. Each week it's been an adventure. We've done it this way.
Pushing the envelope. We got to keep doing it.
We're learning new things. We're trying new things. We're trying to keep up with all the cool new toys out there. So, yeah, please check us out. SkiBumPodcast.com, Facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast, Twitter.com/SkiBumPodcast, and Instagram.com/SkiBumPodcast. Mario, you know what time it is.
I know what time it is.
Nice and loud. I like it.
Yeah. It's time for a little weekly flavor.
Yes, it is.
So what do you got today, Brian? What do we got going on?
Well, you know what? I'll let you start because there's a bit of a theme behind what you're drinking.
My little drinky drink is swishing around. I hit a little ice in a nice copper glass. So I'm doing the good old-fashioned Moscow Mule. And this is in part because I think I'm a little beard out and I love my Moscow Mules. And this time of year, you start drinking something a little bit more refreshing. So with all the events going on this weekend, Moscow Mule is going to hit home pretty good. So we'll talk about it a little bit later in the show, but we got some events going on with our buddies from Gosling's.
Ryan Gosling.
So Gosling's, and they actually make the ginger beer that's in my Moscow Mule today. So.
Oh, that's very different than Ryan Gosling. Just as delicious, though.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it's awesome. I love these things, man.
Yeah, they're really good.
The problem is I love them too much.
Yeah, I hear you.
They go down so easy, especially with, like, when I hang out with girls, they're like, oh, yeah, I have a Moscow Mule. I have another Moscow Mule. I have another. It's like, whoa, you had, like, five of them. They're like, oh, you don't feel it. I'm like, that's okay.
And stand up and floor.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's how it usually happens, yep.
It's so easy drinking.
So I don't have the proper ingredients for a Moscow Mule, so I did an extremely ghetto version of that. What I did have, because...
Keep them style.
Well, because the ingredients for a Moscow Mule are what? It's ginger beer, vodka...
A little splash of lime.
Lime and mint, right?
No mint.
No mint?
No, that's it, just lime.
Oh, all right. Well, so I didn't have any ginger beer, any delicious Goslings. So what I did have was ginger kombucha tea. And I decided to add some vodka to said ginger kombucha tea. So it's some sort of weird Japanese ghetto mule.
Get your probiotics in there, son.
Getting my probiotics on.
Nice. So,
you know, it's not the worst thing I've ever drank. So, you know, there's that.
So there's that. You got that going for you.
So I got that going for me.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Moscow Mules, I just they've been – ever since that trip to Telluride, they've been like a good standby favorite because I'm like, they're so simple to make and they're so delicious.
Yeah, whenever I think of Moscow Mules now, I think of our Telluride trip because that's when I was first introduced to them. So
yeah,
special place in my heart along with Telluride.
Even last summer, I remember it being really hot out. I was at a barbecue and I brought over stuff for Moscow Mules. I'm like, yeah, I'm just feeling Moscow Mules today. And we started drinking them, and then all of a sudden, like, somebody had to run out to get more stuff because everybody's like, these are great, you know?
Yeah, they're super easy drinking.
Oh, yeah. You can make them as strong or as light as you want. It's nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. All right, so next we have a little bit of little ski news time.
There it is.
A little ski news.
That's right. Yeah, so things are starting to wind down in the North American ski world. So we found some pretty interesting stories, though, kind of relating to skiing, of course. And the first one comes from our friends over at TGR. And what they did is they figured out, using all kinds of science and stuff,
science.
That, A man-made powder day at Jackson Hole would cost $59 million.
Dropping the bucket to some people.
Isn't that crazy? It said to coat Jackson Hole Mountain Resort with 12 inches of goodness, it would require 2,723 snow guns to pump out 108,900,000 cubic feet of snow. All in all, that powder day is worth about $59 million.
Damn.
Isn't that bananas?
I wonder if, like, eventually that'll happen. Like, some sultan comes from, like, Dubai. Is like, make it all snow. And just goes, like, snow tubing down it or something.
Yeah. You know what? It's not outside the realm of possibilities, really.
Wow, 59 million.
59 million. Yeah, it says 108,900,000 cubic feet of snow is needed enough to build three Empire State Buildings.
Damn. I wonder how fast they could do that.
130,680 gallons of water per acre.
Damn.
And there's 2,500 acres at JHMR. So 326,700,000 total gallons of water would be needed.
So let me ask you, the polar ice caps are melting, right?
Yeah.
Do they theoretically just dump that same money into, like, putting snow on the polar ice caps, like, during the summer to keep it, like, frozen?
Well, I know last summer, Whistler, after their terrible season they had in 2015, they were trying to take care of the glacier up top and were blowing snow up there for the first time ever.
Nice.
So it wouldn't be unprecedented if they did try something like that.
Keep everything frozen, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we control everything else. Why not start controlling the weather?
In a good way.
In a good way.
To enhance ski season.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Mm.
Incredible. All right.
Cool stat, though. Yeah. We'll send the link will be in the show notes. So you can check it out. And there's a really cool infographic showing all the, you know, the electricity, the manpower, the water required to make this happen. It's cool.
I love the infographics. That always gets me.
Yeah. They did a nice job with it.
The cool ones to get. All right. So next up, we got London Marathon and ski boots. So there's a 36-year-old guy, Al Mashel, from Hertfordshire.
Hertfordshire. Bloody hell.
Hertfordshire. He's done what no man has threatened to do before. He ran an entire marathon in a pair of ski boots.
God damn. That guy's crazy.
Damn. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So London Marathon is a serious deal. He ran in a 15-year-old pair of Salomon boots in his ski racing cat suit, which – you break out a cat suit for any event. That's like Christmas morning right there. Took him 8 hours and 1 minute, which actually isn't a bad. I mean, you know, for being in ski boots.
Yeah.
He said he had some muscle aches. I could imagine because that's a whole crazy type of running style with ski boots on. But they have pictures of them, and they have pictures of the ski boots, and they're legit ski boots. I mean, they're old. They're actually pretty front-tilted boots, too. They're like racing boots.
Yeah, he was saying that after about 9 miles, I had been passed by most of the runners, but there were a few people walking at the same pace.
Think of that. Like, you finish after that guy, you're like, shit, the guy with the ski boots beat me.
Yeah, right. That's when you need to know. That's when you know you need to step your game up.
That's crazy. Yeah, he said people really fall into two camps: people that either think he's a nutter or a hero. So he's either a king or a clown in your eyes. But yeah, pretty interesting stuff. He got written up and he got some notoriety for it. So
wow, he's got an interesting life, though, too. At 21, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor and underwent 3 years of radiotherapy and chemotherapy treatment.
Wow.
Damn.
Oh, yeah, the tumor removed in 2001.
Yeah, he's been skiing since he was 6 years old, and his mother was a ski instructor.
Yeah. He said, so, yeah, there's a lot about him in this thing. It's so he had cancer. Then he was skiing since 6 years old. He had a really bad crash trying to make the British World Cup team in Verbier. He actually caught an edge and 100 miles an hour. Just
did you see good. That? Over 100 miles an hour he was going and crashed.
Crazy. And then the following year, he's diagnosed with kidney problems. So because of the drugs he took during chemotherapy. So he also had a kidney transplant then in 2012. So he's been through a lot of shit. He had cancer, kidney transplant, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And now he's running marathons in ski boots.
Wow, brain tumor, kidney problems, massive ski crash, and he still ran the London Marathon in ski boots. That is awesome.
Still alive and kicking, has a big liter of beer at the end of it with his medal. So
He's
kudos
got
to him.
a smile on his face, man. Cheers to you, Al. That's freaking awesome. I
Right.
love it. That's a
Cheers,
great
mate.
story.
We'll just raise our Moscow mules to you.
Raise a pint. Fantastic.
All right, what else we got, Bri?
All right, next up.
Good happy stuff.
Oh boy, another sad story. Another weird story, actually. Jay Peak in Vermont could be closed due to fraud allegations. So 2 weeks ago, the SEC and the state of Vermont filed civil fraud charges against the owners of Jay Peak Ski Resort, accusing them of misusing more than $200 million from foreign investors intended for development projects.
Crazy.
Yeah, so what they're saying is that Jay Peak is set up as a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, we had the Ponzi scheme headline a few weeks ago because that's when it broke. But now this is more details on they might be forced to close, is what you're saying?
Yeah, the court said that they have very little cash and numerous upcoming expenses. And if more money is not obtained, they'll be forced to shut down the operations of Jay Peak and keep Burke closed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
Ugh.
Well, that's the whole idea
Yeah, and I don't
behind.
know if, I mean, I'm sure part of the problem too is that, the bad year they had this year. And it says that Jay Peak requires 7 to 11 million to stay open through the current off season,
Right.
and the gondola needs major and immediate repairs that could run over $4 million.
Jeez. See, the whole thing behind a Ponzi scheme is you're not making money, but you're feeding it from the money coming in. So they kept putting up these projects and using the money from those projects, those future projects, to fund them now. So it's kind of like you're losing money, but you're like taking out more credit cards to like pay for everything, and eventually catches up to you. And now, when they got caught with the Ponzi scheme a few weeks ago, when that broke, they had said they're not going to let them do that anymore. So anything that was allocated for project in the future has to be allocated and used for that. So they stopped them from robbing from Peter to pay Paul, in other words, you know?
Yeah, and now they're just saying that they don't have any more money for anything.
That's crazy.
Ugh, that sucks.
Way to ruin a ski resort. That's how you do it. And that's also probably how you're gonna end up in jail, because this is a pretty big charge too.
Yeah. Ugh.
It's blanket under SEC, which is pretty messed up.
Yeah, when they're involved, very few good things can happen.
Yeah, I just think there's going to be a big change for a lot of resorts and hotels and anybody that's doing big projects. Like, I don't think like the SEC's really looked into them before. They've usually just been under scrutiny of like just accounting, and if people get with crazy accounting. But now what happens is everybody's running these big projects, and a lot of these big projects you're taking either bond money or some kind of public loan or government, loan or some kind of money where there's like the stocks or government involved. And that's where really SEC comes in. So it's kind of like now there's a whole other area that probably hasn't even been audited or monitored, which I would imagine I wouldn't be surprised if they catch some other resorts doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things you almost don't want them to look because you're afraid of what's going to be exposed.
Right.
Because, yeah, I mean, so many of these ski resorts now are going, yeah, like you said, these big projects, especially these summertime, let's create these coasters and adventure parks. I mean, that's, I don't think those are, they're not massive expenses, but they're a lot of money that could be going to other things that might be more important to ski season.
Right. Well, I mean, you hear all the time too, like, there's a, $20 million improvement, and then they're going to do a $50 million improvement the following year. It's like, well, theoretically, the way this whole JP thing would have worked is, you take the 20 million, you use 15 to cover your operating loss, you start doing the project for 20 million and then you borrow even more money. You borrow like the 30 million to cover your expenses plus that project that you just finished from the 50 million project that you just funded. And now that $50 million project is $30 million short right now. So then you either say, oh, we ran over on that project and asked for more money, or you fund another project that now feeds that. And that's the whole Ponzi thing. It just gets out of control.
Yeah. And for those who are unfamiliar with Jay Peak, Jay Peak is probably, I think it's the northernmost resort in Vermont. It's, well, it has to be because it's almost on the Canadian border. And they have this crazy, gigantic water park inside too, in the main hotel there. Yeah. I mean, it's really, really cool. But you wonder, you know, to create this amazing, you know, indoor water park must cost a fortune. And how many people are really traveling up to northern Vermont to go to a water park in the wintertime?
That's crazy.
Or the summertime, you know? It's a weird question that, again, you probably don't want to answer and just assume everything is cool. They're making tons of money. Everything's on the up and up. But then you hear stories like this, and it makes you have to look at the details and what's really going on. And a lot of times, like this one, you're getting answers that you really don't want to see.
Yeah. It's nuts. It's like that, you know, play of the producers, right? They funded a play just so it could go out of business and they could keep the extra money.
Yeah. And I think the worst thing about it is it's probably got the best tree skiing on the East Coast.
Yeah, they get pounded with snow. It's the whole thing there. They got great trees.
Some of the best, some of the most snow in the East and some of the best tree skiing. So, and we had plans to go up there this year, but, you know, as we've complained about for the past 4 months, you know, Mother Nature didn't really work in our favor this year. So we did not get up there. So hopefully they will still be open next year and we can get up there and hit those trees.
I blame Mother Nature's idiot child, El Nino.
Oh, El Nino. Yeah. So good for some people, so bad for others.
Yeah. Just crazy child, crazy love child that Mother Nature had.
Like an idiot savant.
That's right. All right. So what do we got next, Brian?
All right. So here's some happy news as it's, you know, starting to be the end of ski season in North America. It is just beginning down in South America. And there were a couple of nice big snow reports that we want to give you guys the heads up on. Las Leñas, Argentina had its second big snowfall of the year already. And they're supposed to be opening on June 18th. But right now, you look at the pictures of it, I mean, it looks, I mean, completely covered.
Yeah, I was looking
at a nice solid cover of white.
I was looking at it this afternoon. I think they got like 4 feet or something like that, right?
I think so, yeah.
Pounded.
Because yeah, they got slapped.
I was looking at like ski trips going out there.
Yeah.
Anytime there's snow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's looking fantastic. So that's a good one. And then also down in Nevados de Chillán, Chile, they also are getting pounded with snow already.
Man.
And, you know, they have the same general time frame looking to open around June 18th. So they're a good 6 to 7 weeks away. They're getting buried.
Las Leñas is saying got over 15 centimeters of snow.
That's like that's like 6 inches though, right?
That's like, yeah, no, like a foot.
15 centimeters?
15 centimeters. Oh, yeah, it's like half a foot or something like that.
Yeah.
I was reading something. They got this is their second big one, right?
I think so, yeah.
And they got pounded last year, right? So this is falling.
They
right
did, down. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, so they're getting hit again. And so to give you guys the, you know, kind of perspective on it, so they got hit with a big snowstorm, and they're looking to open in June. So it's almost the equivalent. The snow they're getting now would be as if North American resorts got buried in September. That's how early it is for them.
Damn.
How awesome is that?
I'm on there right now looking at rates to go ski.
Ha ha.
They have a 40% off sale right now.
Ooh.
7-night deals.
What if you were told that, yeah, oh, you know what? There's 3 feet of snow coming and it's September 28th. How amazing would that be? I would take off work immediately and just set up somewhere and wait with there with my skis till it all fell.
Exactly. That'd be awesome.
Be the first in line. Yep.
Let's see.
So if you're playing a trip to South America, you going to get some fresh tracks. You better get down there soon because it's already on the ground and hopefully it'll stay.
Some freshy fresh.
Freshy fresh down south. Yep. All right. So that pretty much wraps up our ski news for this week. And on to our sort of topic.
So our shorter topic this week. What do we have, Brian? What are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to call this We Drink and We Know Things.
Oh.
Oh, boy. Oh,
got
boy.
Crazy. Got a little crazy with ski news and shaking.
A little bit of a remix there.
A little remixing.
So if any of you are Game of Thrones fans, we are recording this the day after episode 2 of season 6 aired. And there was a classic line that, you know, they were asking of Tyrion something, and he's like, I drink and I know things, which, you know, is a beautiful, you know, kind of phrase, statement, almost an ethos, if you will. So I thought about it, and, you know, that's kind of what this podcast is about. We drink and we know things, and that's what we want to share with you guys. So it could be the new highfalutin ski bum motto. You may see it on t-shirts, stickers, who knows what, because I think that really applies to us.
And that's sometimes why we drink, because we know things and people that get us to places where we could drink in style.
Ah, which leads us to our week this week, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We got big plans.
So let's start with this past week. What did you do this past weekend, Brian? Anything fun?
No. I had to do stuff around the house, which was not fun.
Not fun. Me, on the other hand, I had a little golf outing. I actually golfed a lot better than I expected. Since I've been on retirement for about 6 years, broke out the clubs, and I wound up carrying my little scramble, captain's choice kind of fundraiser that we did. And I wound up carrying the team for about 5 holes.
Wow, look at you.
So, yeah, I was actually hitting pretty well. And then I got tired and started drinking, and that was it. The wheels fell off the bus about hole 12. I was done. I was ready to go home.
Yeah, for me, that's the whole problem with golf is my ADD just does not allow me to enjoy 18 holes of the game. It just takes too long.
Like 12, 14, I know from – I used to play like every week, a few times a week when I was in North Carolina. So – I got decent, and I know myself by now. Like 9 holes, fine, good. You know, you get a good, you know, have a good time out there, get some good exercise, have some good shots. But once I hit like the back nine, I start going into like 12, 14, maybe 16. Then it all blows up. Then I'm like, I'm ready to go. That's it. I could care less.
Yeah. So did you do any prep for this golf outing? Like, did you go to the driving range, pitch and putt, anything?
I thought about going to the driving range last week, and I wound up on I was going to go to the driving range on Thursday, and I wound up going to happy hour instead. I was like, do that. I had
that's practice for golf too, technically, right?
That was. I actually went to the I went to Dick's, and I got some golf balls and some golf shoes because I couldn't find my other golf shoes, which I then found them after I got home, and I was like, well, they're pieces of crap, so I kept the new golf shoes anyway.
Nice.
So that's the only prep I did.
All right. I like that. Going in cold. That's confidence.
It was the best. And then, you know, you hit the driving range in the morning. You hit, a small bucket of balls real quick. And then, you loosened up and you go. Hey, I'm not winning $1 million like Tiger Woods, you know.
Yeah. I thought maybe you were going to say you prepared to go play golf by playing like PGA 17. For a couple hours.
That's right.
Or 16, whatever one's the current one right now.
Brian, I prepared mentally for this, okay? It was a lot of mental thinking about it and thinking about how I didn't do anything to prepare, but mentally I was there in the game. See, it's all about the mental part.
I hear you. You know, back when I used to play golf a considerable amount, I bought this audio book of, you know, one of those things that, you know, it's one of those, like, sports psychologist wrote it about how to get yourself ready and get yourself in the, like, prepared for playing and what to think about when you're going up to the tee and preparing for putts. And I took it with my father-in-law-to-be and uncle-in-law-to-be and listened to it in the car for about a minute. And they were like, yeah, queer, Led Zeppelin.
But yeah, we're not listening to this, Brian.
Like, you know, we're going to just drink and have fun, right? This isn't, you know, we're not trying to get our club, you know, get on the PGA tour or anything here.
It's like, you realize we don't get paid for this. Like, this is enjoyment. We get whatever. Yeah,
it's supposed to be fun.
That's funny.
What is the most hammered you ever been golfing?
I don't get, like, because you still always have to walk and you got to move around. I'm like, I'll just have a few beers. And that's part of the problem, too, is I have a few beers and I just get tired. Like, I don't have, like, a huge amount to get all hammered on the course, like, because I'd rather just leave the course. If I'm going to get that drunk, I'm just going to leave. I'll go to the clubhouse and meet everybody there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just curious because, like, when Andrew and I, a couple weeks ago, we did a bike ride and we went past Liberty National Golf Course in Jersey City. That's that, like, beautiful country club, private, like, less than 300 people golf course right on the Hudson River. I mean, you see lower Manhattan on almost every hole.
Awesome.
And on the path we were on, we walked past, well, we kind of rode past, you know, a foursome playing through. And these dudes reeked of booze. Now, I don't know what this place, you know, what a round costs there, how it works. I know just to get a membership, I think it starts at $250,000 for membership fee.
Wow.
I mean, like, Phil Mickelson's a member, Eli Manning. I mean, these are, you know, super, super, super wealthy people who belong to this course. So I don't know what these guys were drinking, if it was, like, you know, 50-year Macallan or the blood of, you know, Jesus. I don't know what it was, but these guys were hammered.
I mean, we drank a bit. I mean, we started with Bloody Marys in the morning, which I didn't have a Bloody Mary. I had a beer. Got like 11 before we teed off, and then there were shots.
No man mosa.
there were shots during the course, but only a few. But it was okay. It was pretty tame.
Nice.
And it's funny, you know, like, you know, so. I enjoy myself. I have a pretty good time. I have a pretty well-versed array of, like, hanging out. But a lot of the guys I was hanging with, you know, this was like their weekend to get away from their family, and, like, they're away, and they're like, it's just the idea of them being away from the family, like, being on your own. And I guess, like, they get a rush out of it, and I'm like, dude, like, okay, you guys are going to bed at 11. All right, that's cool. I mean, I'm going to the casino, so. So I went to the casino, the Mount Airy casino. That was all right. I don't like that casino, but I'll say that on it too. I don't like it.
Yeah, that place is a little bit depressing.
Yeah, I didn't lose. I lost a little, but I was there for a little while. But I don't like the feel of it. The layout, the feel. Just not a big fan.
Yeah, when you have something like Sands, that place is much better.
Sands is better. I also like Atlantic City. I mean, just because there's more variety, it's a little bit different feel, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit seedier, you know. That's more my style.
You feel a lot better about yourself going to Atlantic City too.
Exactly. It's like a casino and like a, you know, like a really crappy Walmart or something.
Yeah, I think the most I've ever had while golfing, the most booze I've had, right before I got married, we went and a friend of the family belong to a country club, and you know, country club's a very different kind of situation. And I think maybe halfway through, we had those big plastic clear cups of vodka tonics.
Nice.
I think I had two of those. And again, it's the middle of the summer. You put two of those down. You know, it wasn't a mess or anything, but you definitely didn't really care so much about losing a ball or if you five putted.
Yeah.
It actually made it feel a lot more enjoyable, to be honest.
Nice.
You realize how much you suck.
You know, I usually never like drinking that much when I exercise. So even when if I play softball, like there's a friendly game I play in Central Park. I'm probably not going to play again this year, or maybe go for like one or two games. You know, you drink a little bit and you run around out there, but you're still exercising. I'd rather drink afterwards, you know, or not exercise. That's my whole thing.
I play softball.
See, it's the afterwards. That's when
you've earned it.
Yeah. That's when things happen. You know, that's when the magic happens. So I may go golfing again this year. We got to plan a trip out. I think Rem's been golfing a lot. I know you golf. We need to get a little outing out. We got to do something.
I'm a terrible golfer, but sure, I'm in.
Everybody's a terrible golfer.
That's true. So yeah, so besides golf, we this upcoming weekend. So we talked about it last week. NHL playoffs are going on right now. We're in the second round. Things are getting heated.
Yeah.
Matchups are getting really good. So we, because of Mario's kindness and generosity, we are going to the Islanders-Tampa Bay game on Friday.
Yeah. Game four.
Game four.
So Islanders killed them the first game. And the second game, they lost. They just didn't come out. I'm a big Islander fan. And I've never gone to a playoff game, Islander playoff game. I've gone to near end of season games. I've gone to big rivalry games like Islander Rangers, like when I was little. But I've never been to a playoff game. So I figured, you know what, I haven't been to the new stadium, haven't been to an Islander playoff game. So why not? And why not bring my buddy Brian?
You're checking off three boxes there.
Boom. That's what I'm saying. That's
you got playoffs, you got Barclays Center, and you got me.
Saturday morning, that's off the bucket list.
Boom, right there, taken care of.
And then Saturday is a whole other show.
Ah, yes.
So Saturday is the America's Cup is coming. So we'll get into that. We'll get into the whole details of that. But that was another thing that was on my bucket list. And we got a connection with somebody from Gosling.
The good folks at Gosling's.
Like that. So, yeah. So we got lined up a pretty big weekend ahead. We're going to have a lot more pictures. We're probably going to have to I'm going to bring my big camera for the America's Cup.
Oh.
I'm not bringing it to the Islander game because it could get broken. There's going to be a lot of yelling. Terribly. Probably not going to be able to speak after. But
hey, you know what? If you love $12 beers, the Barclays Center is the place for you.
Oh, yeah. And since I got the tickets, I know which motherfucker's buying.
I would expect nothing less.
That's fine.
$12 beers for everyone.
But, it should be good. It's a new stadium, so.
You got the Shake Shack next door? Can hit that up beforehand?
Oh, yeah. Giggity, giggity.
Yeah. And if any of you guys are there, if you're around and you hear the podcast before the game, it should be up by, I'm guessing, Tuesday or Wednesday at the latest. If you're around, we'll send out some tweets. You can meet up with us, get a drink, watch the game, have a good time.
Yeah. We'll even tell you where we are.
Oh,
We'll have to Instagram it that out the day of the game. So if you're at the game, we'll Grammy-gram it out.
So if you go to Instagram.com/SkiBumPodcast, you could find out where we're going to be?
That's right. You could stalk us. Happily, you could stalk us. We could hang out. We could have beers together.
Yeah. You could even go to Facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast or Twitter.com/SkiBumPodcast to find out the same information.
Yeah, there's going to be some stupid shit that goes on that night. Andrea, if you're listening, I'm just warning you ahead of time. There's going to be some stupid shit that night. Nothing bad, just stupid.
Well, as crazy as things may go, I have to confess, last time I was at the Barclays Center, by last time, I mean the first time, there may have been a cannabis edible that was taken before going.
Oh, that's right. I heard that story.
And I learned how to use Uber that same night upon that same delicious edible cannabis treat. So yeah, it was definitely, it's always an experience when I go to the Barclays Center. I try to make it an event every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I haven't been there yet. So that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. And again, if you love $12 beers, you will love this place. They have them in spades.
It's any like professional event. That's like the rub. Like I usually don't go to like professional event games unless I get free tickets. Cause I'm like, I just don't want to, I'd rather watch it at home. Usually, you know?
Yeah. Right.
I have my $10 beers that I bought. And then
we paid 10 bucks for a can of Heady Topper at a restaurant. And that's going to seem like a bargain.
I'm saying
getting a Goose Island for 12 bucks.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's the rub.
PBR.
Got to pay John Tavares, man. Yeah, if you want him to score goals in the playoffs, you got to pay that boy somehow.
For every $12 beer I drink, he better score a goddamn goal.
That's the deal, right?
That's the deal. And I'm making that now.
Nice. All right. So is there anything else we have on that topic or the main topic, or are we going to
No, I just other than that, I got this whole schedule for biking that I just put out to my team slash group of people that I bike with. And yeah, that's gonna start kicking up. I ran 3 miles yesterday. I've been trying to run 3 miles every day.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah, starting yesterday. We'll see
Nice.
if I run today. Let's put it that way.
Nice.
I'm on this roll, since yesterday. I've been running 3 miles.
After that mule, I don't know how much running is going to happen.
I know. Might be more. Well, I still didn't watch all my shows. I watched Game of Thrones.
Oh.
Fantastic. But I didn't get to watch Silicon. I fell asleep in Silicon Valley and I didn't watch Veep. So I'm kind of just.
Both were good.
Yeah, I'll catch up on those tonight.
After your run, of course.
After my run, of course. So, but how about you? You've been biking to work, right?
Biking to work now, 3 to 4 times a week. I
Yeah.
just started my new gym today, which is, awesome. So yeah, things have been good. We're gonna hit it pretty hard this summer, no matter what we're doing. So we'll have tons of, cool, fun, interesting things to talk about, topics that are, we're near and dear to our hearts that are gonna be, of course, ski related in some regard, because everything we do in the summertime is all in preparation for ski season. So yeah, a lot of fun, cool, interesting things happening this summer. So we'll keep you guys in the loop. And you can keep yourself in the loop by going to skibumpodcast.com and going to iTunes and subscribing and rating us, and going to facebook.com/skibumpodcast, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, and instagram.com/skibumpodcast. Was that
All
the
right,
official
Robert, kick this
start?
shit off.
All right, let's do this.
Got your Bitcoin thing to start off. All right.
Yeah, this was a pretty cool story that I saw last week. So there's a new browser called Brave, and by it's Brave Software, and they launched this actually back in 2015. But with this browser, what they've built into it is a Bitcoin wallet, which is pretty cool. And what it also has is built-in ad blocker. So what they're doing is they're blocking all this content and putting curated ads in there. And you can support the articles that you like by making these micro Bitcoin payments. Because one of the cool things about Bitcoin is, unlike PayPal, there isn't that huge transaction fee that you have to pay, which can be up to 30%. There's almost, it's like a 0.0001% transaction fee you pay using Bitcoin. So the whole point of this is to, only have this curated content that's appropriate for you, and just blocking all of the junk stuff that you would usually see.
So you're saying that this browser blocks the ads that are served up by the web page and replaces it with their own ads?
Yes.
That's freaking devious and genius.
Yeah, exactly.
Screwing the guys that
And
are trying to screw you by throwing the ads in front of you.
yeah, it's pretty cool. And the creator of this is Brandon Eich, who got in some controversy last year. He was the creator of the Mozilla Corporation, and was also the creator of the JavaScript programming language. And he made some comment, I think about gays or something. I forget exactly what the issue was, but he was forced to step down from Mozilla but started this other company. And again, it's not a political thing, not neither here nor there. It's just a very interesting technology that he's looking to, kind of put out there. And of course, the old school publishing folks are not having this at all right now. And he claims that's because they don't understand that they can really benefit from this, and that he would help them, he would actually set up Bitcoin wallets for them and help them to, increase their revenue by using this, this Brave browser, the correct way. So it's pretty interesting to read about, to see. It's cool seeing people coming at things from completely different points of view, instead of just trying to do the same old thing over and over again.
That's a pretty cool concept, but I can imagine because, what publishers will pay for their ads to be served on certain sites. So, they're actually paying for that, and then they're getting superseded by these other ads, they're going to be pissed.
But how can you blame the browser for what it's displaying?
Well,
You
you
know,
can't.
it's one of those things, like how can you, like who is to blame for it? Like who can you actually point? I mean, I understand the browser's creating this and they're going to want to point the finger at that, but it's the consumer's choice how they want to view this.
Right. No, it's just the content, those companies are going to be just it's because they cut deals with other companies and they're like, well, now we got to cut a deal with the Brave browser people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's genius and more to it, man. It's great.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I've actually used the Brave browser. It's still new, so it still needs some polish, but it's pretty cool. And it's cool having someone with a different point of view and different way of handling this than, Chrome, Safari, IE, which are all large companies that do other things and have a browser. This is a company that their whole business is the browser and a whole different way of the value of the content within it, which is really cool.
Oh, they have it in the App Store. Look at that. I may download it for my laptop.
There you go.
As long as it's secure, I'm good.
Well, that's what Tor is for.
Ah, there we go.
Ah,
That's why you need Bitcoin.
that's right.
That's why I need a burner phone. I've actually been looking into that, actually.
Not a bad idea.
I have an old iPhone, and I just got a SIM card for it, and it doesn't work because it's too old of an iPhone, so I got
Oh,
to
really?
get them. I want to use it international if I travel, but
Oh, nice. Going down South America skiing this summer, right?
that's right. And it'll be a burner phone. It's my Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad.
My Breaking Bad phone, man. It's my Heisenberg.
Nice.
So, that's
All
cool.
right, next story.
All right. So we mentioned this week we have a lot going on. This is the 35th America's Cup. Is going to set sail in New York City for the first time in 96 years, almost a century. So,
Wow.
the America's Cup is one of those things that's always fascinated me as I was a kid. I remember when they started like showing it on, I think it was on ESPN or the Ocho, whatever the channel was back then.
Wasn't it Wide World of Sports?
Like they used to show it because it was a big controversy. All of a sudden, like for the first time in so many years, the US lost it. And then they were trying to get it back. So they really pumped it up at one point in the 80s. And I remember that's when I watched it. I was fascinated. I was like, these guys are cruising on these really great boats. And I really just had an admiration for sailing back then. And of course I don't know anybody that has a boat. I've sailed, since then, just with people that had boats. And it's always fascinating. It's a fun sport, but the event itself fascinates me. So they're going to race between, I'm trying to think. They're going to race on the Hudson, between Battery Park and I think it's Brookfield Place, which is the old the Trade Center area. So it's
Okay.
going to be a fantastic location. They're setting up a like a free viewing area, and they're calling it like the event city. They're going to set up right there at Brookfield Place, right at the marina there, which is where the Trade Center used to be, and they got all the new buildings up, and it's really nice there, beautiful area that they built down there. So I think it's going to be a great event. And I tell you what, I saw a little bit of racing last year because they had another event, and it was another world, it was another America's Cup racing event. And they had them. They were televising it, and they were showing it. I think it was in San Francisco last year. And I tell you, you look at those boats, and they're freaking amazing. They're like technological, like advanced dream boats. They're great. So it's funny. Like I was talking to Brian and I were talking about this, and Brian, like I was talking to you, it's very convoluted. Like, well, what is it? How do they race? Like what is it all about? So, the This series that's running, they're calling it the America's Cup World Cup Series. And what that is this is what used to be called the Challenger Series. So out of the teams sponsored by the yacht clubs sponsored within the countries that they're from, so all over the world can race, they race to see who's gonna face the defending champion, right? Now the defending champion also races in this series. because it gives them, you know, a little bit of tactical insight to how the other boats race, and the other boats get, you know, tactical advantage to see like how the defending team races. So, you know, it's just good for everybody to race against each other, but it's a real legit race that if the, you know, for the people that are trying to win the challenger's position, they need to get points and win so that they can be the person that races against the defending champ. So U.S. Team Oracle is the U.S. defending champ, and they're going to race next year in Bermuda for the Cup. So there's a series. This series is going to go on for, I think there's another two or three events. They're going to race somewhere in the world. And these boats are just amazing. So if you ever, you know, if you ever go online, I have the link for the Louis Vuitton bought the rights to it. So everything's branded Louis Vuitton. But if you go to the site, you'll see some of the boats, and they're just like technological, like just dreams, like these things. So just a little bit about the Cup. So it started, this is the oldest international trophy that's been awarded and kept going since 1851. It's been in existence. And it got named America's Cup after the schooner that won the first race, the America, which then they took the cup and they gave it to the New York Yacht Club with rules that started the perpetuation of the whole competition. And over the years, the rules have been expanded, have been clarified. There's like rules on top of rules. Like, so like the winning team gets to decide what boat, what type of boats go into the next, or at least used to go to the next race. And they only race every 3 to 4 years. So this is like a big event. It's like the, you know, the World Cup, like the F soccer, it's like the World Cup of yacht racing.
It's weird how they just change the rules every time, though. I mean, it's not even like a defined time when they have it and that the winner gets to make the rules for the next time.
You know, it's a weird thing. I think it's based on an agreement. Like, they know they're going to have it 3 to 4 years, but some years it's three, some years it's four. It's just it wavers a little bit, I guess. I don't know if all the teams have to agree on the rules before they go. Like, there's certain rules that you know, are set, like the deed of gift and the whole rules are underlying. But then there's other things that come into play that they agree on. Okay, we'll postpone it, or we won't have it here. We'll have it like, so there's a lot of like back and forth between these yacht clubs about what the actual cup's gonna entail.
Sounds like having poker night at your house. You know, dealer's choice, and you can make up the rules and Texas Hold'em. Yeah.
It's crazy, and it's not straightforward. So for people to follow it, they're like, I don't know what they're doing. They're beautiful boats, and they're racing around. I don't know how it runs, but you know. So it's kind of like now they race around, they get points, and then they get seeded, and then the top seed goes and races against the defender. So it's pretty easy concept from that point of view, but all the other rules around there are just a little crazy. But New York Yacht Club actually held the cup from 1870 to 1983. And that is just, it's crazy, right?
So they pretty much held the title for 113 years?
Yes, 113 years. And then they lost it. And that's why in the 80s, it was Dennis Conner was like the captain. And everybody remembers that, like, you know, back when they were really promoting the America's Cup, because he was going to win it back because they lost it and he was trying to win it back. So he won it back. But if you look at like Wikipedia, I have the link to the Wikipedia site. And if you look at the top winning teams, they won 25 titles since the cup has been around. I think the closest other yacht club is like maybe, I think, 3 or 5 wins. And then the other ones are like one win here, another win there. So, I mean, the dominating factor has always been New York Yacht Club. So it's a really huge thing for it to come back to New York and them actually have a race, maybe not the race, but a race like in New York, which is pretty cool.
I want to see a Jay-Z Big Pimpin' yacht try to win the race. Why don't they have that kind of yacht race? They have a kind of like hoochies hanging off the top. You have like at least 50 hoochies on the yacht while you're racing.
Oh, well, they're going to have other yachts like that watching, because you'll get a whole bunch of like boats and yachts that'll sit around and they cordon them off to say where they can be and where they can't be. And people will sit there on these yachts and they'll watch from the water, to watch all the racing. So there's a whole boat registration going on. There's you can buy seats on some of these boats, that big boats that are going to be near there. It's a whole huge thing. It's going to be a lot of fun. And one of the reasons we're drinking Goslings today is because our buddy Dan from Goslings got in touch with him, told him, you know, about us, and told him we want to go down there. He's actually hosting something at Henry's on the Hudson, which is on the New Jersey side. It's going to be a perfect spot in Jersey City to look at this. And we're going to be there, and he's going to have a whole Goslings event for a bunch of his, you know, bunch of his buddies. And we're going to be excited.
Including us.
I think that's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot.
That's going to be pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. I've wanted to see America's Cup. That's another thing, like I said, that was on my bucket list, to actually watch an event. But yeah, it's going to be cool. And Saturday should be a good day. They're saying Saturday over Sunday will be the nice day.
Nice.
And the best part about being at the event is, so the racing goes from, I think it's 12:30 to 4:30. And then the Kentucky Derby is like 5:30.
That's right. Yeah. So it's a very, for the alternate sports, not the top four, the other sports, the other big sports in the world, it's going to be a big day on Saturday.
Yeah. And especially after we had a Triple Crown winner for the, you know, last
year. Barrow last year. Yeah.
You know, the first time in what, 80 years that we had a Triple Crown winner? I mean, that's.
No, 40 years.
40 years, whatever.
Secretariat in the 70s.
No. Affirmed.
What do you mean affirmed? Didn't Secretariat win?
Secretariat won, but the last one, I think, was 84? 82.
Oh, so it's been like only 30 years then.
Yeah, it's still a long time.
Not that long. When's the last time they had a Triple Crown winner in baseball? Wasn't it like Ted Williams in the 50s?
Oh, yeah, it's true.
You know?
Oh,
affirmed, the 78.
78 affirmed, yeah.
Oh, the 70s was the golden age for Triple Crown winners. You had 73 Secretariat, 77 Seattle Slew, and 78 affirmed.
You know what it is, too? Like, well, Secretariat was just a beast. They say, like, out of all the other winners, like, it doesn't matter who he ran against. Like, that horse was just incredible.
Well, isn't he, like, isn't his seed kind of in a bunch of these really, like, leading horses, too?
I think he's in all the other ones that won the Triple Crown.
He's like the Genghis Khan of Triple Crown winners.
He is. Oh, well, that's the whole part of breeding. You know, they're like, they want to, you know, keep that in the bloodline. So there's two schools of thought on the whole Triple Crown thing. One, they say, well, you know, you have to be lucky with the group that you race against and having the strong horse racing against that group versus just being an incredibly strong horse. Secretariat just blew everybody away. Like, if you look at how he won races, it was just
not even close, right?
It wasn't even close. It was like, you feel bad for even racing, you know? Some of these other ones, they just barely win. American Pharoah won pretty solid, though. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's happening on Saturday night. So Saturday's going to be a wild day. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be cool, yeah. And so Friday, we got the hockey game. Saturday, we got the America's Cup and Kentucky Derby. So a lot of stuff going on. So just stay following us. You'll find some cool pictures, posts, information.
Yeah. Bring the ladies down there. Bring Andrea, right?
Of course. She's got her nautical gear ready to go.
Let me bring a lady down.
We'll right see. In. Uh-oh. Only one?
I have one lined up. Yeah, only one.
Just only one. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You gotta pace yourself, just like a good horse, right?
Yeah, but yeah. So the other thing I was telling Brian about this America's Cup is, like, they set the rules, and then everybody texts the shit out of this. And if you look into, like, there's like all these conspiracies about, like, people overteching, and then people, you know, lodge a protest, and then the protest gets, you know, turned down, and then they have this crazy fast boat. So it's just like the technology gets pushed so much. It's amazing. It's amazing. That's why Oracle has the backing of Silicon Valley, helping them with the tech on their boat. And they're the ones that came up with this whole fixed wing. So it's not even a sail. It's like this big, gigantic airplane wing that they use as a sail. It's incredible.
Jeez, nice.
And they're catamarans now. They're not even like classical schooners or yachts. They're these big catamarans that fly.
That's so cool. Yeah, I think Top Gear did an episode where they had James May on one of the America's Cup boats a couple of years ago. And yeah, it was not a leisurely cruise for him, that's for sure. It was a lot of work and a lot of speed too. You really wouldn't think these sailboats would get up to these crazy high speeds, but they do.
Well, here's just some stats. So you have the catamarans are about 72 feet long, right? Which is a giant boat, right? Mm-hmm. The wing on top is about 135 foot, right?
Wow.
And these things, so something that big is moving at speeds of over 50 miles an hour on the water, which is insane. I mean, that's flying. And like you said, like these things will go up on one of the catamarans, you know, so if anybody doesn't know a catamaran, it's like these two pontoons with a deck on top. And what they'll do is when they're turning, they'll actually fly up on the one pontoon and everybody has to jump over to the other side to throw their weight against it. So hopefully it doesn't tip over. I mean, it's pretty intense. I mean, and like you said, you don't rest at all. There's people running around like it's bedlam, but it's controlled bedlam. Like this is what these guys practice for. It's crazy.
Yeah, they have crazy workouts and stuff they had to do to be prepared for this. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
All right. That was a lot of information on the America's Cup, Mario. Thanks for that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things only few times a year, but if you ever get a chance to watch it on TV or live, definitely watch a little bit of it just to see what it is.
Yeah. All right. And another thing about working out and staying in shape, next story. Astronaut runs marathon in space, but slower than on Earth.
Oh.
So we talked about the London Marathon and Al, who ran in his ski boots this past year. Another Brit had an interesting marathon story as well. British astronaut Tim Peake became the first man to complete a marathon in space on Sunday, running the 26.2-mile distance while strapped to a treadmill aboard the International Space Station.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, as part of the London Marathon, Britain's biggest mass participation race, the 44-year-old spaceman saw London's roads under his feet in real time on an iPad as 250 miles below him, more than 37,000 runners simultaneously pounded the streets. So he covered the distance in 3 hours, 35 minutes, and 21 seconds. Which was a world away from the record by real race winner Kenyan's Eliud Kipchoge, who did it in 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 5 seconds.
So does he hold a world record now or a space record? He holds like a universal record for marathon.
Intergalactic record.
Intergalactic.
Right? And it says, though, he did run the marathon back in 99 and did it in 3:18:50.
Damn.
So it was about 17 minutes faster on Earth than he was in space.
Oh, wow. That's still really – holy crap.
And also 16 years later. So, you know, when you're running the race at 28 versus running it at 44, it's a pretty big difference.
Intergalactic champion, son.
Intergalactic, yes, medalist. So he – I mean, it's got to be something taken into account being that much higher up, right? Lack of oxygen?
I would definitely be pouring champagne on my phone over after that.
That is for show.
For show.
All right. You want to finish up with this last story now?
I'll let you take this one. I just got comments on it.
Camp Bacon. So I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but every summer out in Michigan, there is a Zingerman's Camp Bacon. So this is June 1st through June 5th. Every spring, bacon lovers, bacon makers, cooking school teachers, culinary historians, writers, statisticians, sociologists, chefs, roller derby professionals, and other pork-driven people from all over the globe flock to Ann Arbor, Michigan to talk, taste, and toast the terrific flavors and cultural iconography of all things bacon-related.
Nice.
I drooling thinking about this.
Their website says a 5-day celebration of great pork.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a whole festival that goes on. It's 5 days. And, you know, they are in Ann Arbor, so they have, you know, they're affiliated with the University of Michigan there. They have a film festival. And I mean, I'm looking at this the stuff they're talking about. Like, they have Newskies Applewood Smoked Bacon. So I don't know if you know about Newskies, but Newskies is this farm out in Wisconsin that specializes in all things pork. I've had Newskies ham at Thanksgiving the last couple of years, and it's pretty much the Kobe beef of ham. It's unbelievable. And they do this Applewood Smoked Bacon that's just thick and meaty and so good. So that's on the first day they're already having that. They have the annual Bacon Ball, a snout-to-tail history of the humble pig. They have a bacon with bacon at the bake. I mean, just 5 days of bacon and pork-related festivities.
They have the Potlicker Film Festival, and on the menu for that festival, they have fresh popcorn with Newskies Applewood Smoked Bacon.
Right? That's what I'm saying. The Newskies bacon.
Oh, bacon popcorn.
Yes. The next day they have maple glazed bacon apple donuts.
Damn, that looks great.
Oh my God, I'm getting so hungry reading about this stuff.
All right, I'll make a note to self, see what it takes to get a flight out there and time off. It's got to be on the weekend. Oh, Wednesday. Ooh, midweek.
Worth it.
June 1st, all right.
They've got speakers. They've got events. They have Mike Zoromsky, who is the smoke master for Newskies Applewood Smoked Meats. Started working for the smoked meat purveyor in 1983. Oh, he was 21 years old.
Sold out already. Fresh Taste of Detroit is sold out already.
Oh, my God. Well, it's only 1 month away.
Damn.
You know?
Camp Bacon Street Fair.
Yeah, there's a lot of good, fun, delicious, smoked, bacony events. So if you're in the area, you better get your tickets soon because things are starting to sell out already. Zingermanscampbacon.com. ZINGERMANSCAMPBACON.com.
Or just go to the website. We'll have it up there.
Zingermanscampbacon.com. Oh, well, I don't know about you, Mario, but I want to shove pork in my mouth right now after reading this.
Yeah, I was actually wondering, like, if they could pair this up with the Biggest Loser and, like, send the Biggest Loser people to Camp Bacon. That would be the temptation.
Yeah, test if they can, withstand the temptation and the draw of deliciousness.
I'm drooling right now. I don't think anybody could survive that.
Oh, my God. I want it so bad.
Damn good. I have a friend that knows, has a relative that's actually Muslim that eats bacon because it's so delicious, which is totally against the rules of his religion.
I totally get it. It makes sense to me.
I'm like, I totally understand it. How do you take bacon out of your diet? I don't get it.
It's just not a life worth living, if you ask me.
I understand the whole religious impact for it, but I'm like, I get where the guy's coming from. It's too delicious.
It is. You know, what are we in this world without these little treats that we get every once in a while?
Mm.
The simple, especially, delicious things.
Especially bacony little treats.
Mm-mm.
Bacon donuts. God damn, I'm thinking of donuts now.
Maple making. I can't even talk anymore. It sounds so good. Maple bacon donuts.
It's because you're drooling thinking about the bacon right now.
Yes, I certainly am.
If I had like
all right,
bacony. Oh, now I'm thinking about donuts. We got to get cake balls soon. Auntie Leanna's got to be – there's got to be a drop of cake balls coming any day now.
Didn't we buy them like 6 years ago?
We did. Yeah. And it was like once a quarter. So I think this quarter – I got to see when we last got them. I don't remember.
I think it was before the Super Bowl because I remember eating them at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we got the first batch in – was it February?
It had to be late January.
January, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking May. This would be the next
second quarter.
Boom.
Yeah. What are your second quarter cake ball results?
That's right. It's like the draft. We pick cake balls. I wonder if there's bacon in these. I don't know.
I think didn't we get like a bacon bourbon one?
I don't know. I'm just drooling right now.
Ugh.
I'm looking it up right now. I'll have to text you later with when we're getting Cape Off.
All right, cool. All right, we're going to wrap up this podcast for this week then. So thank you guys so much for listening. Hit us up. Get all of our info, skibumpodcast.com, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, instagram.com/skibumpodcast. And be sure to follow us, rate us on iTunes, subscribe, and be sure to check us out this weekend because we are going to post some fun, cool, awesome stuff from our events that we are going to.
Cool.
All right.
All right.
And with that, we will see you guys next week.
Stay high, stay fluting.
See ya.